Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. You are listening to Mushing Radio on KVRF-FM in Palmer, Alaska, and throughout the Matsu Valley. Make sure you follow us on Facebook and Twitter on Mushing Radio, as well as Dogworks Radio on both Facebook and Twitter. Tonight, we're continuing our Iditarod Musher series. We've had a whole bunch of interesting guests between the end of Iditarod and now, some big names, Lance Mackey, Martin Boozer, Didi Genro. But today, we have, I believe, our first teacher on Mushing Radio. It is Angie Taggart calling in from Willow, Alaska. Angie, how's it going?
It's going really great. Thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us. How is the weather up in Willow? I haven't made it home yet.
It's raining.
Typical this time of year, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So, as I said in the intro, you are a teacher, and I definitely want to get into that a little bit later. You know, being a teacher and Iditarod pretty much go hand in hand these days, so I want to pick your brain about that a little bit. But before we do, tell us who you are and what you're all about.
Okay, I'm Angie Taggart, and I ran my first Iditarod in 2011. I come from the rainy city of Ketchikan, Alaska. It's where I grew up. And I worked for one of the mushers in 2001 as a dog handler and just fell in love with mushing. And it took me 10 years to get back to where I could get a team and run in the race.
So in 2001, was that your first introduction to mushing, or had you, you know, thought about it since you were a little kid, or, you know, that you went in, you got the job as a handler, as many of us have, and pretty much you have the mushing bug like all of us do?
Yeah. Actually, growing up in Southeast Alaska, you know, Iditarod, you knew it happened, but you just really didn't know much about it other than it was a sled dog race across Alaska. And I was teaching in the bush, actually, in a little place called Pickus Point. That's my first 2 years of teaching. And people out there had sled dogs in the villages, and I really thought it was really cool. And the teachers would go ahead and get a plane ride out to Nome to watch the end of the race. And I knew that I was going to be leaving soon, so I'm like, well, you know what? I'm just going to be a handler next year. And everybody was like, yeah, right, yeah. So I went ahead and asked some of the mushers, and they said, give me a call. And so I did, and that's where it kind of all started.
So you said you're from Ketchikan, which is down in Southeast Alaska, correct?
Yes.
So a lot of folks don't know, you know, the differences in Alaska. Everybody thinks igloos and snow and polar bears and that sort of thing. But that area of Alaska is a lot different, isn't it?
It is. We actually have very large trees, and we're on an island. And we get about 13 feet of rain a year.
Not a lot of snow down there?
Depending on the year, not really.
So it's more similar to Canada, toward, you know, Pacific Northwest, that area, then, in terms of weather and climate and that sort of thing, right?
Correct. Yeah, about 40 degrees year-round. I mean, you know, it gets warmer and a little cooler, but not so much as up here.
Right. So as a teacher, and again, I want to hit on this a little bit. Obviously, you have, you know, you've developed a routine when you get involved, you know, that you have that schedule that you do with your kids. My first question to you in regards to running sled dogs is, how have you used what you have used as a teacher on the trail, on Iditarod, or your qualifiers and that sort of thing? How do they go hand in hand?
Well, just one of the things I was kind of thinking about this week is I listen to a lot of mushers and how they talk about, you know, how they have certain types of dogs that will finish the Iditarod or do certain races, and then there's some dogs that will just do a 300-mile race and so on and so forth. And I think coming from the teacher perspective or from that realm, I look at my students as everybody's going to be successful. It doesn't matter you know, what their abilities are, but they're all going to succeed no matter what. And that's kind of what I bring to my dog team is, you know, some of those dogs may not make the Iditarod team, but they're all training for that. And that's how I look at them. They're training to run Iditarod. And all of them are doing that right now. And when we come down to the end and pick the final 16, you know, there will be some that will be not chosen for different reasons, but I think, I apply some of that. And kids and dogs are a lot alike.
They are.
They are. people always ask me what's easier, and I would say dogs are a little bit easier because they don't talk back. But, you do have a few of those dogs that do give you a hard time. But overall, I think it's really an asset to have taught and, have that kind of that mindset of working as a team and groups and having schedules and things like that and working with those troubled kids or dogs and getting them to succeed.
Right, right. And there are those little troublemakers in any kennel, aren't there, that you just want to put in a timeout or in the corner if you have to.
definitely. Or in the wheel position, yes.
There you go. So currently you're living in Willow, my backyard as well. Beautiful place to run dogs, I guess, if it's raining or not. We've had a whole lot of rain this past year. What can you tell folks that are listening outside, not in the immediate vicinity of our voice? Why did you choose Willow over all of the other places in Alaska to mush dogs?
Well, I guess originally when I worked for the handler, I was in Willow. So I'm very familiar with the area, the trails, the people, things like that. So it's been just a real comforting place. I just have a background with it. So I guess it's more backwoodsy than you would say like Wasilla or Kinnick. You have a lot more. Well, I mean, you have a lot of places there too, but it seems like there's a lot less people.
Right. And you can run up and down the highway. I believe I saw you and your team the other day over by the Townsite Food Mart running up and down the highway there.
Probably if I had my yellow helmet on, that was me.
that was you. So you're preparing for your second Iditarod. You ran your first in 2011, took a break in 2012. Mm-hmm. If we can backtrack just a little bit, what did you do to prepare for that? What qualifying races did you run? Did you think you were prepared when you entered that first race? Give us an idea of that, that rookie run. I guess that was your rookie run, right?
Yes, it was. It was the first time, yeah. My qualifiers were in 2009. I qualified with the Kinnick 200, and then with the Tioga 300. Those were the two races. And at the time, I was in Ketchikan teaching, and the Reddingtons let me come up and run their dogs to do my qualifiers, which was really awesome. So that was really helpful because the rule was that you had to qualify before you ran the race. So I couldn't come up, take the year off of teaching, run my qualifiers, and then run the race. So I had to do it the year before. So that worked out really well. And then I took the next year off from teaching in Ketchikan and moved up to Willow and started training. And, like everyone else, you probably think, oh, man, I don't think I have enough miles on my dogs. Are they ready? Am I ready? And I just said, well, ready or not, here we come, because we did as much as we could during this whole time, and we got to the starting line, and I felt like, well, we're either going to make it or not. And, my goal was to always make it because there were so many people supporting me that I was going to make it no matter what happened to me.
Right.
It was going to have to be the dogs that had the problem that we would, not go because I don't want them to be injured or anything. So I was going to have to be the one that took us out of the race because I had a broken leg or heaven forbid, whatever. But I felt like, I think any rookie feels like, am I really prepared for this? And you just don't know until you're really out there and the dogs, really do step up.
Right. And, I always ask the rookies after their first race. I know it's 2 years removed for you, but do you think that you were prepared in those two qualifiers to go out there and do that, that 1,049 miles or whatever the race is at that given point? Or do you think that you needed more? We had a guest on a couple of weeks ago, and she said that she ran qualifiers, actually a couple of months ago, she ran qualifiers for almost a decade. And then she said she wasn't quite ready, at least, fully ready, until she had all of that under her belt. Do you think you were prepared to go?
Well, the year, I didn't mention this, but the year that I did run Iditarod in 2011, I did run two races. So I actually had four races done before. I did the Copper Basin 300, which I think is a must for anybody running Iditarod. I thought it was actually harder than Iditarod was, because it's so compact, you know, in 300 miles. And you see everything that you see on Iditarod and maybe a little more.
Wow.
So I would say that that is by far the best race you could ever run to prepare you for that race. I don't know. I guess I'd wanted to do this for so long, for 10 years, that I just mentally had that I was going to do this race. And so I felt, I guess, as prepared as I could be, but, you know, you always have that little doubt in your mind that you're missing something or forgetting something and not knowing what the trail's going to hold, because I didn't read anything about it ahead of time because I didn't want to freak myself out. So I didn't read any of those graveyard dreams or any of those books before the race, you know, and I tried not to read any of the Don Bowers notes or anything like that because I figured it would psych me out. So I just am like, well, we're going to go for it. Whatever we run into it, we'll just deal with when we get there.
If it's my understanding, you finished 43rd out of 63. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Not a bad finish there as a rookie. You finished definitely not at the end of the pack. How did you feel that that finish did for you, you know, at 43rd compared to how some other rookies do?
Yeah, I felt really, I was just glad that I got there healthy with the dogs healthy. I mean, I crossed that line and I was ready to go another 300 miles. You'll hear it on the video that CNN did on me. And I'm like, all right, let's go another 300. I mean, I was so joyous through that whole race. I just had the time of my life. And people were just so wonderful. The other mushers were wonderful on the trail. I just had an overall just awesome experience.
Very cool. And I definitely want to talk about your dogs here in just a second. But if memory holds true for me, I believe that you kind of leapfrogged down the trail last year following somebody on a plane or something. Is that memory correct?
Last year. I went out and volunteered. I was actually at three different checkpoints, and I helped with the dog, drop dogs, and then I also helped with comms, communication.
So did that prepare you at all for this year's race? Did you, you know, you saw a different side of the Iditarod at that point? You know, you saw all the logistics and things. How did that help you or even maybe hinder you for this year's race?
I think it's a big helping because, you know, I think every musher should have to help out in a race. I helped out in the Northern Lights 300 also this year. And I think it's so neat for you to see behind the scenes how much work is put into those checkpoints, all the man hours, all the labor. And it was just really cool to watch the teams come in too and see how everybody deals with their dogs. And I was able to see that I do, you know, the big mushers that came through, I realized I do the same things, very similar to what they do, but maybe not as quick. But there were a few little tricks I learned from other people along the trail. So I think it's going to be a benefit this year when I run.
Well, of course, you have a whole lot of aspiring mushers listening to this show. Can you share a couple of those tricks, or are you keeping those close to the vest?
I don't think it's anything that big. It's just, you know, not doing things twice. Like when you walk to put down your dog bowls, you're picking up dog booties at the same time. You're multitasking. You're not just doing one thing. You know, if you get tired, you just start doing things over and over, like one thing at a time, when you could be more efficient and doing two things at a time. And even Martin Boozer had pointed that out at the rookie meeting. You know, when you're after taking your dog booties off, as you're going to put dog bowls down, pick up the booties as you go along, or you know, vice versa, or however you decide to do it. But do things together, not each individual item.
That's great advice. And like you said, when you're out there for 2, 3, 4 days with very little sleep, a lot of things become very monotonous. And, and if you have that routine down where you're picking up booties and you know, dropping bowls or whatever you're doing, it makes that a little bit easier. Tonight, Angie Taggart is our guest here on Mushing Radio. She is a teacher as well as an Iditarod musher. You can follow us on Facebook on Mushing Radio, and you can follow Angie on Facebook as well as Instagram. I know you're a big fan of Instagram. You take a lot of pictures on there and post them on Facebook. You know, social media has taken over the mushing world, hasn't it?
It has. It has. It really opens it up for a lot of people. I think it's really a good thing.
I do, too. So let's talk about your dogs. How many dogs do you have in your kennel right now? Do you have any from a particular line? Do you breed your own? What is your, you know, your kennel management philosophy, I guess?
Well, right now I have 22 dogs, and that's basically what I had when I ran in 2011. I own 14 of those dogs, and I got those dogs from Ryan Reddington when he was kind of switching over from distance to sprint racing now. So he sold me that team. And then I'm borrowing a few other dogs from Ramey Reddington, and a couple other people gave me one or two dogs that they weren't running this year. So that's really, really great. It's a great team. The majority of the guys are the same dogs I had in 2011. There's only five different ones that I've never trained with. So that's kind of exciting. They are a little different. They're starting to fit in, though, with the group as we're moving down the highway. So that's a good thing. But I have a pretty laid-back crew. A lot of teams are real excited and crazy, you know, when you're hooking them up and stuff. I have a routine where I just bring the dogs to the line, and they just kind of wait until I put that tug line on the back, and then they get a little crazy. So I think it's good for conserving energy, and I really kind of like how we have that kind of even-keeled kind of feel to the kennel. So I don't know if that's a hindrance or a good thing, but for us it works really well. So.
And, of course, like most of us, you're probably in the middle of four-wheeler training, ATV training right now. Mm-hmm. What is your method to that? What are you running right now? Are you running, you know, 10, 20 miles? What are you doing?
Well, I'm working up my way up to 10 right now. You know, we didn't run this summer at all. So, you know, we just got started in, I think, September 5th was our first day running. So it's almost been a month now. So we're slowly building the miles, but I think we're going to be taking some bigger jumps here. The dogs are looking real strong and everything. We're working on hill training. We found a few great places to go up some hills and strength build there. So, so we're just going to add, every week, bump them up a little more until the snow hits.
And when is your prediction? I used to ask this last year before we were on this channel, what people's predictions were for snow. Of course, us mushers, we want it in July, if at all possible. When is your prediction for that first time to run on the sled?
Oh, man, I don't know. It's been so hot. I mean, we've only had one day that was freezing, it seems like, this month. So I'm hoping at the end of the month, but I don't know.
Yeah, definitely before Thanksgiving, I hope.
Yes, I hope so, too.
So, Angie Taggart is our guest tonight. Let's talk about that whole teacher deal. You know, so many kids throughout the United States, I'm sure other countries as well, follow along on the Iditarod. They have a whole curriculum during that, the end of February, beginning of March. And it's a really big deal. Of course, Target puts a teacher on the trail every year, and it's a great big educational-type program. How does that, do you think, as a teacher, how does that help students in today's education system, this whole idea between Iditarod with history and you know, science and math and all that? Explain that to us as a teacher for me.
Well, I think, actually, you know, they talk about all the subjects that it pulls out, but I think another thing is animals. Kids gravitate towards animals, and there's a lot of children that do not have animals in their lives, and I think animals are a very big part of a lot of us. You know, we grew up with a dog or a cat, and it molds us into the people we are today, because animals are just so life-changing. You know, they just really bring a lot to our lives. And so I think a lot of the allure for some kids, even if they aren't good at subjects, certain subjects, the dogs are what pull them, you know, into this race. You know, they want to sponsor a dog. They want to follow this dog, this musher's dog. Oh, this one's a cute one because it has, freckles on its face or whatever. So I think it's all around this whole Iditarod race and all the curriculum that goes with it is just so beneficial for kids, no matter what level they are. You know, you can pull a kid into this race, whether it's using math, reading, writing, history, or just the dogs. So I think overall it's a benefit no matter how you look at it.
And they typically follow that curriculum in the early grades, if my memory holds. You know, second and third graders are doing a lot of this work, and you'll go into these schools, and I've done a lot of talks during this time since I'm not an Iditarod musher yet. So I'll do a lot of these talks during Iditarod about dog sledding during this time, and you'll see the little musher sleds, and, you know, so-and-so's in first place, and so-and-so's in second place, and the first thing the kids will say is, my musher's Lance Mackey, or my musher's Dee Dee Genre, or whoever, and they're so excited if their musher is in the lead. How do you think that helps with, even with competition? You know, in today's world, competition is everything, good or bad. Do you think that that helps with that, teaching good sportsmanship, that sort of thing as well?
Yeah, I think it is. And, you know, I've always done something with Iditarod ever since I've started teaching for the last 10 years. And first, kindergarten, first, second grade, I even taught PE, and I integrated it into all my classes that I ever had, even before I realized I was going to be running the race. And I think it's really beneficial, you know, for integration into all the curriculum. And I guess I lost what you were just asked me.
No, that's fine. That was my point. You know, I was just looking for that firsthand perspective, and you hit it right there where you said it integrates everything. And what a great way to teach our kids. You know, there's so many ways that teachers interact with their kids, and I think you guys do a miraculous job. You know, I don't think you guys can get enough credit. You know, you guys do awesome as school teachers, because you do have one heck of a job. You're taking somebody else's child and molding them to be very productive citizens for a good portion of their lives.
Yes. It is a lot of work, but it's very, very rewarding.
So you've taken a little bit of a hiatus. You said that you're doing some substitute teaching now. What is the plan next year? You know, hopefully you do well in the race. Are you going back to teaching? What is the immediate goal here?
You know, I'm not really sure. My team is quite a bit older. A lot of them are a lot older. So if I was to continue with mushing, I would have to, you know, invest. I've had all my dogs pretty much fixed, so I won't be having puppies.
Right.
So I would have to invest in some other dogs. But, you know, eventually I want to start a family at some point, and I'm not getting any younger. So that might be something to look for, you know, in the future here. I do have a steady boyfriend and things like that, and I would love to get back to teaching too. But, you know, your heartstrings are with the dogs, so I can't say I'd be totally out of dogs, but maybe not doing it for running Iditarod.
You mentioned a boyfriend. Does he help you out in the kennel? Are you a kind of a one-woman show? What's the deal there?
I kind of am a one-woman show. He works here in Anchorage. He's a pediatric dentist, and so he's pretty busy. He does come out on the weekends when he can and helps out, but for the most part, it's just me and the dogs. I don't have a handler, so it is a lot of work, but I think, you know, when you were talking about my rookie run and stuff, I think if I had someone helping me, I wouldn't have been as prepared, because whatever happens, I have to deal with it on my own.
And it truly is a full-time job, isn't it? Almost 365.
Oh, definitely, yeah. You have to meet all those dogs' needs no matter what time of night it is. You know, there might be a dog fight or there's something happening in the lot at 1 in the morning. Well, guess who has to take care of that? It's you. So, you know, you're there for every need that they have.
And like you said, it's very similar to school. You know, you got to deal with those problems as well.
Mm-hmm. You do, yeah.
So here we are, beginning October. You have about, 4 months and a little bit of time before the race. Are you doing anything to prepare in terms of racing this year? Are you going to do any of the mid-distance races, or are you pretty much just going to train up for Iditarod?
It just depends. This time around, sponsorship is not as big. I had a whole year of raising money for my first Iditarod, and I kind of, at the last minute, decided that I was going to run again this year, so I'm kind of behind the eight ball in fundraising, so we'll see if there's any money left for any races. I was thinking maybe the Northern Lights 300, Don Bowers. You know, I'd love to go out and race on the coast, the 440 that they started last year.
The Paul Johnson.
the Paul Johnson, but money I don't think is going to be there to do that.
And if we can give that perspective a little bit to folks that are not mushers, each race, even though it's a smaller race, like you said, the Kinnick 200 or the Northern Lights or Don Bowers or something, that's about a $1,000 weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, easily. I mean, Copper Basin cost me, I think, $3,000 because you have a handler, you have somebody following you around each checkpoint with a vehicle that uses gas. So it can get pretty spendy, and if you're talking about the races that are out of town, you have to fly everything out. So it gets pretty spendy.
Right. So come March, you're planning on being there on downtown Anchorage and being prepared. What is your goal this year? You're 43rd place in 2011. Are you trying to march up that ladder a little bit? Or are you comfortable being that middle of the pack, you know, type deal? Obviously, you know the big boys are going to take it, but you never know. How do you feel this year going into it? I know it's real early in the season.
Yeah, you know, my goal, what I'm setting my goal is bettering my days. I did in 13 days. I'm hoping for 11 days. I ran my race my rookie year as how the dogs looked. I didn't really have a schedule or anything. I just was like, okay, it looks like they could use a couple more hours of rest. We'll wait, okay? They don't. Let's go. So I think this year I'm going to have a run-rest schedule like a lot of people do. I'm not real sure how I'm going to run that yet, but I'm going to kind of see how the dogs perform in training and kind of go from there.
And I know you have a lot of fans on Facebook, a lot of friends and followers there. We talked a little bit about that before, and, you know, a lot of mushers are on Facebook these days, and they share a lot of their stories and that sort of thing. My question to a lot of you guys has been, how can that help the sport of mushing? You know, there's a lot of armchair mushers these days that follow the race pretty closely on Facebook and, you know, all the other deals. Do you think that there can be anything out there that can give the fan a better perspective, a better way of following the race than what's going on right now?
I think videos kind of give people a real insight. I know that, you know, when I'm out, sometimes I'm able to put a little clip up off my phone or off of my GoPro camera, and people are like, wow, it felt like I was right behind the dogs. You know, it kind of gives them a glimpse into that feeling, which you never really experience unless you're actually on the back of the runners. But, you know, it gives those people, like you say, the armchair mushers that are out there, that little bit of experience of being a musher.
Right, right. And great advice. And another question to ask all of you guys is, what is one piece of advice you can give to that up-and-coming guy, whether it's the guy that runs, you know, the two or three dog sprint races down in, you know, Minnesota or whatever, or that guy that's packing up the U-Haul right now ready to move to Alaska to do that Iditarod? What's one piece of advice you can give those guys?
Follow your dream. I mean, if you want to do it, you can do it, because it took me 10 years to get there, but that's what I tell all my kids. I'm like, no dream is ever, ever too big. If you want to do something, put your mind to it and do it. Don't ever look back and say, man, I wish I would have done that.
That's right, because you might only get that one chance. Angie, we're just about out of time. I do want to give out your website real quick. It's mushingadventures@blogspot.com, right?
MushingAdventures.blogspot.com.
And again, follow on Facebook and Instagram and all over the place. And we'll make sure we post links on our page on Mushing Radio as well. Angie Taggart was our guest. Angie Taggart was our guest tonight. It was a pleasure being on with you this evening. Anything in your last parting words?
Just everybody that loves mushers and mushing and dogs, just come out and support us, and just hope we have a wonderful time out there with everyone on the trails. Be safe.
Awesome. Angie, thank you very much. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Okay. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you. That was Angie Taggart tonight on Mushing Radio. Again, you can hear the podcast on mushingradio.com. It'll be uploaded later this evening or in the morning as soon as I can. This is Robert Forto. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye. Do we run over?
Excellent.
All right, thank you.
Hey, thank you. That was good questions and easy flowing, and thank you.
Well, you sounded great.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, I didn't get to mention, but I do have some CNN videos, too, that might be fun to link onto the page. that people can actually see the race.
Angie, if you could, can you give some links over to me on Facebook, and I'll make sure I get them on the page for you?
Sure, I can do that for you.
Okay, thanks a lot. I'll talk again soon, okay?
Okay, thanks, Robert.
All right, goodbye.
Bye-bye.